You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in sunny Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 on WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7.
I like to say that.
We have it all over our Facebook page as well. You can find that on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, as well as SitaMediaInc.com.
We have an action-packed show today. We have our friends calling in from, it's a new name, Hospice of St. Francis is now called St. Francis Reflections and End Stage, and I love it. And we also have on our second segment, Congressman Charlie Crist is calling in to have a discussion with us about trying to be the governor again. He was a great governor. I see Kim shaking her head over there. So we have a studio is packed today. Ellen Little is here. Ellen O'Neill is here.
Yeah, that's okay.
O'Neill is okay. Irish.
I know. Irish as it comes. Irish as it is.
Kim Meredith is here. Hi. Samantha is here, as usual. Oh, my God, Samantha. So many Samanthas in my life. Samantha Nazario is here. And Paul is here running our board. This is why we said it's a Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is fun, unscripted. It's very educational and quite informative. We have a lot of fun when we first open our show. And we always talk about things before we go to our guests. And today I just have a CDFO show that, you know, we all learn from each other. We learn from history. We learn from education. We learn from the past. We learn from mistakes. And we certainly learn from the people that came before us, right?
Absolutely.
And right now, all of us are watching what's going on with COVID-19. And our president now has a mandate for the federal workers to get their vaccines. And I have to say, I fully support that view. Because I'll tell you what, if you work in the nursing homes and you see the little elderly patients, when they come out of their rooms, they still have to wear a mask. Imagine you're 80 and 90 years old and you're coming out of your rooms and your wheelchairs and you have to wear a mask. In our dining room, when we used to have four patients around a table, now we have two. The nurses are all wearing masks. It's 8 hours. I'm breaking out, as you could see. So I'm just saying, you know, people have gotten to a point where compassion fatigue is setting in with a lot of healthcare workers. And this term, vaccine hesitancy, it's like, dude, what is your issue? What are you so worried about when all of us have taken the vaccine and we're doing just fine? Enough with the conspiracy theories. Enough with the chaos. Enough with wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Wear a mask, don't wear. It's like, all right, just do what's right for everyone. If you have an exemption, whoop-de-doo for you. Bring it to your job or whatever. You know, but it's like, I'm watching this whole thing play out, especially in the state of Florida with our governor. Wear the mask, don't wear the mask. Go to court, don't go to court. The vaccine does not care which political party you
register. Doesn't even care how old you are at this point.
It doesn't care how much money you have in the bank. It doesn't care what your religion is or the color of your skin. We are in this together. And we are all on this earthly journey called life. And life is nothing but a lesson in humility. Why are you here, right? So, and that's one of the things that I talk to my hospice friends about. Especially my friends at St. Francis Reflections and End Stage. And that's why I invited them to come on the show. So Mary Lawson is going to be calling in with Sharon Ivory. And we're going to talk a little bit about how they got involved with Hospice of St. Francis and what we could do moving forward. So I think I hear the phone. I think they're on. So
Zita, right before you go to Mary, I do want to acknowledge big companies like Amazon and Walmart and Target and Costco that are taking that that cue from the president, and they're actually moving forward with requiring vaccinations.
That's right. Well, it's all about safety, right?
It is.
And that there's a reason why when you go for a job, they ask you for a drug test. And if you pass, you get the job. And if you fail, whatever happens, happens, right? Because they want to protect people in the workplace. So anyway, so I think of friends from St. Francis Reflections Life Stage Care. What a mouthful from 80s days. They're on the phone. Mary Larson is the Director of Community Engagement and Business Development. And Sharon Ivory is the Director of Communications, like me. She likes to talk. So Sharon and Mary, are you guys on the phone?
Hi, Sita. We are here. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, I know you were here before in person, and I miss you. And yes. Next time, I know you guys will be coming back in person. So,
we would love that.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So, hey, Sharon. I like that Zoom meeting we had on Friday. That was really nice, too.
Oh.
And forgive me if I don't say the whole mouthful, because, you know, it's hard when you got used to saying Hospice of St. Francis to now say St. Francis Reflections Life Stage. But the word itself has a message. It's about reflecting about life and the stages of life, and I love it.
Absolutely, Sita. And again, it was so nice to talk to you as well. And Mary and I both are just so grateful to be on your show today to talk about St. Francis Reflections and the services and support, you know, that we offer, not just to our patients and their families, but to the community as well, especially during this challenging time, Sita.
It is challenging. Oh, my goodness. So, Mary, would you tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about Hospice of St. Francis that has been around in Brevard County for over 40 years. Tell us a little bit about how it got started and some of the services offered.
So, thank you, Tita. We were Brevard County's first hospice. We were founded by a nurse, Emily Sasso, who was a resident of Titusville, and she actually, based on a dream she had, decided she needed to start a hospice for her neighbors and friends who were people who were trying to care for their family members and wanted to take care of them at home and allow them to, have personal care from people in the community who were just residents of the community and very friendly with them. She had quite a vision, and she started the hospice with all volunteers. So friends and family who were nurses and social workers helped her to do this. And she did that for about 20 years. It was an entirely volunteer organization for over 20 years. And then we became a Medicare certified hospice program. And so we've been doing hospice care in Brevard for over 40 years. We are the only independent, not-for-profit hospice in the county. And we are caring for over 425 patients every single day. One thing that we really like people to understand about hospice in particular is that we bring the care to the patient and family.
That's right.
It is not.
I know. So, the thing is, I like that you guys are committed to speak about hospice, offer services, offer comfort to people who are dying and leaving our planet. And you're changing the conversation from dying to living and celebrating life. And I love that. I love that you guys, all of that is included in when you speak to potential patients and their families. And that is one way that families feel really, really comfortable about getting a patient admitted into hospice, because you care about that. And I think I would just address that with Sharon. How do you guys go about including the families in celebrating the life more so than the death?
Yeah, it definitely is a collaborative, effort, Sita. And I just want to add to that what Mary was saying about us being the only independent, interfaith, not-for-profit comfort care resource in Brevard County. In addition to that, Sita, just to tag on to what you were talking about earlier, I just want to inform you and our listeners that 95% of our team is vaccinated.
We're all clapping. You can't see us, but we're clapping.
Yeah. We are really proud of that, that fact, Sita, and, our hospice organization really was on the forefront of this. We required vaccine before the federal mandate, and we made sure that our vaccines were available to our patients and also to all of our staff. That was very important, and we were able to continue caring for our patients and families both at home, in nursing homes, in assisted living facilities, and in the hospital throughout the entire COVID pandemic. And in fact, we were able to allow families to be with their loved ones who had COVID at end of life. And this is something that was very unusual because, as you know from your work, Sita, a lot of times families were not allowed to go in to nursing homes to see their loved ones.
Yeah, I know we've had a few of the Hospice St. Francis Reflections on Life Stage patients, and the chaplain and the nurse and the nurse's aides, they all wore complete PPE from head to toe. And that did make us feel good because we didn't know which facilities you guys were going into and then coming into ours. You know, so that really made us feel comfortable having your hospice come in to take care of our residents. But I just wanted to let you know that my friend Kim Meredith is here. And she had talked a little bit about me about having hospice for one of her loved ones and what great support emotionally and spiritually she had gotten. Correct, Kim?
It was. And not so much before the passing, but after. They were there for me. It carries on. Just because somebody's gone, they don't leave that day. They stayed with me for a year after I lost my father. I mean, it was grieving and grief counseling afterwards. So, oh yeah, props to hospice. I'm a big supporter.
Yeah. So if you all want to talk a little bit about your grief support during the patient's life and afterwards, we'd appreciate that.
Yeah, and you know what? It's certainly so good to hear, you know, the response, you know, back from Kim as far as the support, you know, services. You know, for myself, it's also a personal, you know, journey as well. I lost both my mother and father to a terminal illness in 2015 and then at the end of 2018.
Hello?
I may have lost them.
Hello?
Wait a minute.
Oh, we better check and see.
Yeah.
Check. I'm not sure what happened, but we'll get them back on the phone. Oh, we seem to have lost all friends from Hospice of St. Francis Life Stage. Paul's going to come back and check it. But
I have to say, she's amazing. The question I have for her is, where do they provide care? And she listed them all.
Yes.
So.
Well, you know what? That's the thing with them because they're professionals. They know what they're doing, you know? Yeah, I think we're calling right back.
I have to say, at the end of this, at those stages, the hospice care does make a difference because they hold your hand through the process and you don't feel so
right.
alone.
Oh, we're back on.
Yeah, we don't know what happened, but that's why we tell people on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, our show is fun. It's unscripted. You never know what's going to happen. And we get right back on. We just pick up business where we left off. So Samantha had a question for you. Somebody just texted us a question.
Hi, Sharon.
Oh, great. Hello.
You're so amazing that, I mean, you kind of answered our question. I'd just like you to elaborate on it a little bit. It's, where is the care provided for the patients?
Care is provided wherever the patient lives. So that can be in a personal residence. In your home, an assisted living facility, or nursing home, and we provide the care throughout the entire county of Brevard. So our care teams go out to wherever the patient is and is most comfortable.
And who can receive hospice care? And one of the questions we got was, what can it continue after 6 months?
So that's a good question. It's a question a lot of people have because Medicare basically sets the rules for who is eligible for hospice care. And their rule is that the patient has to have a terminal condition that in the normal course of events would result in end of life within 6 months. However, at the end of 6 months, many, many, many patients are still with us and doing well. And so we are allowed to what's called recertify them for another period of time. And that can continue. So we've had patients on our services for 1, 2, 3 years at times.
Yeah. And Mary, you know so much about hospice. I was just wondering, how did you get involved with hospice?
Well, thank you for asking that. I was a medical social worker and worked in home care and had my first experience as a home care social worker going to visit a patient who was terminal, but her doctor did not want to have the hospice conversation with her, believe it or not, and that sometimes happens. And so I was sent out to have that conversation with her, and it really changed my life and my career because I watched what a difference that made for this woman. You know, and I went into that conversation a bit nervous myself, but to see how much she was worrying about for her family, for her children, for her parents, knowing she was going to die, being uncomfortable and not having good symptom management, to see her go from that situation to having an entire team come in and support her, and for her to know before she died that her children would have grief support, that her husband and parents would have grief support, was absolutely incredible. And when I had an opportunity to come to St. Francis Reflections, I jumped on it, literally.
And right. And you know what it does, too? It helps the person who is dying to die with dignity, in the comfort of their home or their nursing facility, surrounded by people that they that loves them, and also pain-free. And that, and that leads me to our next question, which I'm sure you all see this a lot too. I do notice that a lot of people are afraid of pain medication. And I'm not sure, you know, there's a time for pain medication when you're in pain, and there's a time when a patient has cancer or they're suffering and it's administered. And do you guys give in services and stuff to your nurses and medical staff about care for the dying when it comes to pain management? Because I notice a lot of nurses still have misgivings about giving morphine and things like that at the end of life.
I'll let Mary elaborate on that, Sita, but I just also want to say that our medical staff is led by Dr. Lauren Loftus, our chief medical officer, and a wonderful and dedicated and compassionate group of physicians, and not just physicians, but all of the support that we have there as far as our nurse practitioners, our nurses' aides. So, you know, that definitely is driven by them to provide that care. But I'll let Mary elaborate a little bit further as well.
So we do in-service our staff on a regular basis. We have a whole department that is just for clinical education of all of our clinical staff. And the question about pain medication and morphine does come up a lot. What's important to understand is that the family is educated as well. That's a main role of the nurse who goes to see the family and the patient, is to educate them about their options. And then it's the patient's choice. So the patient chooses what they want. And that's another reason that we like our name Reflections, because our care reflects what that patient wants.
That's
correct.
We don't
tell them what to do. It reflects their choices and their wishes. But you're absolutely right. The education of our clinical staff is a high priority for us. And we are really proud of our team. We have 8 full-time physicians who work with us. And all they do is take care of our patients. They're not doing other things, other jobs, which is a little bit unusual for hospice. And they are board certified. So this is something that we're incredibly proud of.
Yes, I just want our listeners to know who we're speaking with. We're speaking with Mary Larson. She's the Director of Community Engagement for St. Francis Reflections. And we're speaking with our good friend Sharon Ivory, who is the Director of Communication for Hospice of St. Francis Reflections.
Ladies, we have a question for you today, which is always a question on my mind because my grandmother did pass in hospice care. Who pays for it? Did we lose you ladies again?
No, they're there. They
have okay.
But you know, they got to think about that because money talks. And we need to know who is helping to pay. I mean, you got to pay the bills. So you got to take care of the patients.
Who pays for the hospice?
So hospice is actually a Medicare benefit. So anyone who has Medicare can choose to have hospice care. And we also have folks who have Medicaid. And then private insurance and TRICARE also pay for hospice care. But what we want people to understand also is that we do not refuse any patient based on ability to pay.
That, so yeah, that's
amazing.
I know.
You just made my mouth drop.
Yeah. I should take a picture.
We do not. And, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about being a not-for-profit is that we have the freedom to make decisions not based on, you know, the bottom line necessarily, but we can make decisions based on what we feel is best for the community, what the community needs, and what patients and families need. So we absolutely do not refuse any patient based on inability to pay. Everyone needs this care, and we want to provide it.
Yeah, and, you know, and also the good thing about you guys, you have your care plan meetings where you have your full team dedicated to having this patient in front of them virtually or in their minds, and they talk about the specialized medical care for the children and the elderly, and all the care plans are made specially for that patient. And I do know with hospice that patients worry about, do they have to give up their doctors, and how is hospice going to improve their quality of life? And you address all of that in your team meeting. So talk to us a little bit about your team meetings where you all have this patient in front of you and you're doing these care plans to address the needs and wants on an individual basis.
So, Sita, sometimes I say to people, imagine if you as an individual had a whole team that included your doctor, the nurse at the doctor's office, a social worker, a chaplain, a grief counselor, a home health aide. Imagine if you had that care team and they met to talk about your care specifically. Every single week you were reviewed and they talked about how is this person doing? Are there any changes? How is their medication working? How are they doing emotionally, spiritually? Imagine if we all had that kind of care. That's what hospice care is. Patients are discussed, our teams meet every single week and discuss the patients, and the care is absolutely individualized based on, again, the patient's choices, their values, their wishes. We listen to them, and then we come together and we talk as a team about what can we offer to make sure that this patient's wishes are met. And that does include not just the physical care, but also what matters most to this patient in the time they have left. We have a wonderful program that we call What Matters Most, where we actually ask that question, what matters most to you in the time that you have left? What's most important? Maybe it's, and we hear all kinds of things, Sita. We hear, I want to go to the beach and go fishing one last time. I want to have someone come and help me put together all my scrapbooks so I can leave those for my kids. I want to FaceTime with my nephew who's in Alaska. And we work with them to make these things
right
happen.
You facilitate it. And so, Sharon, I just want to let our friends and our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends know some of the services that you all offer: the grief support, emotional and spiritual support. You support employee engagement, staff support, outreach to nursing homes and community partners. And Sharon, what do you guys do? We have about, 2 minutes left, Paul? 2 minutes left. How do you reach out to the community and who do you partner with?
So we have, outreach, teams and coordinators that daily, communicate and outreach to our community care partners, which include, Parish Regional Medical Center, the hospitals Health First, as well as the Stewart Hospitals, Melbourne Regional, and Rockledge Regional as well. So we do provide that, constant, communication and support, to them as well, Sita. And I also want to say that our services have, over the past few years grown to include palliative care and pediatric palliative care, and then, like you just mentioned, our numerous grief support programs. We also have a veteran program as well, And I know Mary oversees that and can certainly, you know, talk about that and our last few moments as well.
Okay. And you also, November is Hospice and Palliative Care Month. You also have the Hospice Foundation. And Mary, really quick, because we have less than a minute left, give us the website if someone wants to volunteer or learn about the services or look at the event page. So give us a website and the phone number if somebody wants to call and speak with somebody at St. Francis Reflections on Life Stage Care.
Absolutely. Well, let me step in. So, Sita, our telephone number for anyone that wishes to learn more about St. Francis Reflections and our services and support is 321-269-4240. And then in addition to that, our website, we can be reached at reflectionslsc.org or on Facebook at St. Francis Reflections.
Paul, can we give them one more minute just to speak about the Reflections of Love? Okay, Paul, the producer is going to give you all 1 minute to speak about the Reflections of Love, because I think it's important for people to know how you honor people in a unique way and uplift their families and just whatever is left of a person's spirituality, right? So tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So we were formerly Lights of Love. And so we've rebranded, right, to reflect our mission and our values. So the name is now Reflections of Love. And it's going to be in November, and it's a beautiful celebration, Sita, and tree lighting ceremony. And it's a way to honor all of those that we have loved and lost in a beautiful and unique and uplifting way. So there will definitely be more to come on that, but, you know, we're very proud to have the annual, you know, ceremony. And we've also expanded in years past. We've had it in 3 cities, and we've now expanded to 5.
Okay.
So,
you know, he's given us the bye-bye, but before we leave, Ellen is just going to ask you one more time to give us the website, the phone number. She's going to post it on our website, so all of listeners can learn about Hospice of St. Francis Reflections Life Stage Care. And thank you both for calling in. This segment went by too fast.
Yep, one more time for that website and phone number.
Thank you so much, Sita. We look forward to being on your show in the future. So again, the telephone number for St. Francis Reflections is 321-269-4240. Also on Facebook at St. Francis Reflections, that's STFRANCIS Reflections, and then also at reflectionslsc.org.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us, and Hospice of St. Francis and the Reflections that change, the merge, I should say. you've been a great supporter of Viewpoint and Seated with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for such a long time. Thank you. We're going to take a quick station break, listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud9Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9. Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we are very honored and delighted to tell our listeners here in Brevard County, Florida, around the world, in every state in the nation, that we have our Congressman Charlie Crist on the phone, who we hope will become the next governor for the state of Florida and get his old job back.
Yes.
So, welcome to the show, Governor. Well, can't say governor yet, but good, former governor, we could say. Welcome to our show, Congressman Charlie Crist.
Thank you so much, Sita. It's an honor and a privilege to be with you today.
Well, you know, we were, I don't know if you heard the beginning of our show, but we were talking a little bit about the chaos that's been here in the Florida, in the state of Florida, that's created by people who are using COVID-19 as a weapon. They've weaponized it and made it so political. Wear a mask or don't wear a mask. Get a vaccine or don't get a vaccine. And it's very sad that our governor here, Ron DeSantis, in the state of Florida, decided that he was going to make this mask mandate and getting a vaccine political to where people feel like they have to choose sides. And I said when we opened the show that the COVID-19 virus doesn't care if you're Republican or Democrat. It doesn't care if you're black, white, or green, what your faith is, what your color is, how much money you have in the bank. We should all be doing our best to promote getting the vaccines, wearing a mask if you have to, and, of course, resetting the economy. So we want to open our show, Congressman Charlie Crist, with your take and how do you feel about the mask mandate and what's going on in the state of Florida right now?
Well, what I think is that Governor DeSantis is really overreaching and not paying attention to science. Because, as you know, we're number one in hospitalizations. We're number one in people that are getting this virus. We're number one in deaths. And that's tragic. And, you know, all he would need to do is simply lead and lead by having, you know, consulted with scientists, with healthcare professionals, with physicians, with nurses, and understand that getting the vaccine and wearing a mask are the two safest, best things that we can do to crush the virus. And he simply won't do that, and I don't understand why. And now he's fighting the Biden administration by wanting to do that, by wanting to get people, more people vaccinated, by wanting to encourage people to wear a mask so that we protect each other from this virus. It just doesn't make sense. In fact, it defies all logic.
Right. And, you know, I am a nurse, Governor. Congressman Charlie Crist. You know, this group here, they're all rooting for you to be the next governor. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. We're sitting in here, they're all calling you governor. And I'm saying, wait a minute, well, let's just wait. But here's the thing. I'm a nurse in a skilled nursing facility. And I was saying, it's heartbreaking to watch the elderly patients have to, they still have to wear a mask when they come out of their rooms. Because we have staff members who are not vaccinated. We have people coming into our nursing homes who are not vaccinated. And I have to say, last year, when we were on lockdown, we were able to get the virus a little bit under control. And now, with people not vaccinated, we've seen what the Delta variant has done. So let's talk a little bit about the cost of this virus and what it's costing the state of Florida.
Well, I think what it's costing the state of Florida, most importantly, is lives. That's the most tragic part of this. And now it's really getting to children as well, which is such a tragedy. I can tell you personally that one of my nieces attends school here in Pinellas County. They have decided not to enforce the masks. And so she goes to school, and she gets the virus. And then she's 5 years old, by the way. And then she goes home, and my 2-month-old niece is, as a result, obviously exposed, and she contracts the virus. So this is what's happening across the state of Florida. It's not necessary. It doesn't have to be happening this way. But as you say, the governor has made it a political issue. It shouldn't be a political issue. This is a health care issue. And, you know, just like we have, you know, people in our society wear seatbelts or stop at red light or honor and respect the speed limit. These are the kinds of things we do as a society in order to make our society be more safe and have greater health care and less death, frankly. The fact that it's at a political level really is disturbing.
Yes. And, you know, we, and also we just have read an article about the cost of what it's costing the hospitals for COVID-19, and Samantha has it right in front of her.
Hi, Congressman Chris. It says median cost without insurance is $49,160. That was $68,000 for a hospital stay. With an ICU ventilator, you're looking at almost $250,000. I'm the mother of a 21-year-old immunocompromised young adult, and I know that I would probably be looking at more like $500,000 hospital bill if he was to contract COVID. How are people supposed to come out of this?
Well, that's unbelievable, and I'm so sad for that situation. That it even exists at all is unnecessary. As I said earlier, what we need to do is encourage the vaccine, encourage the wearing of masks. It's the right thing to do. It's common sense, and it's also supported by almost every medical study you can find. And so why this is not what we're getting from the list from the leadership in Tallahassee is beyond my comprehension. Thank goodness that President Biden does understand it. He understands that we have to do what's right to protect us from this virus. And that's the kind of leadership that he's providing. And thank God that he's there. You know, without that kind of leadership, we might be only hearing from what the governor has to say and misleading us and putting us in the situation where we're number one in the virus in the entire United States of America. That's where he's brought us.
Absolutely.
And it's just wrong. He's complicit in this.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Congressman Chris, what is your outlook on the counties that have stood up against the governor's no mask mandate and have actually mandated masks? How do you feel about those counties?
Well, I'm very encouraged. You know, I know Alachua has done that. Broward County has done it. Palm Beach County, Miami-Dade,
Brevard.
And others across the state. Brevard, thank you very much.
Yes.
And, you know, those counties need to be congratulated on their courage, frankly. You know, because the other thing that the governor has said is that if some people, you know, defy him, if you will, that he's going to dock their pay. And apparently he's already doing this in Broward County and Alachua County. It's unbelievable. It really is, and it's irresponsible, and it's really bullying. And that's hard to imagine and hard to comprehend, that these people who are simply trying to save lives and keep people from contracting the COVID virus are being penalized for trying to protect people. It's unconscionable. It really is.
Right. So, Governor, you know, when we talk about health care, we all talk about health insurance, right? I mean, I know many people who are in my age group, 55 plus, you know, yeah, who are working just for health insurance. And here we have our governor, Governor Ron DeSantis, who does all kind of shenanigans when it comes to Medicaid expansion for our state. And at the same time, he's interfering with science. Talk to us a little bit, when you do become the governor again, what are we going to do with Medicaid expansion? Because there are so many people that can afford to write a check for health insurance. There's others who are getting it from their employer, and the poor gets Medicaid. And we see that there are a lot of people that need Medicaid expansion for their families. Talk to our listening audience a little bit about that.
Certainly. You know, that's exactly right, what you just stated. You know, health care is something that we all need, and it's something that we all deserve. And the fact that the state government, the governor, won't accept Medicaid expansion, that absolutely means that 800,000 to a million people in Florida are not getting health care again today because he is saying no. And that's just wrong. It is not right. It is irresponsible, and it can be changed with an election. And that's why I'm running for governor, to bring common sense back to our state government, to make sure that we have a leader that has a heart, that uses his mind, and understands that what we need to do is simply do what's right for each other. As I said earlier, this is not political. This is a health care issue. And when it comes to healthcare, you rely upon the experts, on physicians, on nurses, on other healthcare professionals. Take their advice, understand that they're educated, and they're there to provide their expertise and give us the very best guidance that they can. And we should listen to it and not pretend like we're doctors. Certainly the governor is not one.
Yeah, and the other thing is too, I mean, most people run for office because they care about others. They care about the community. They care about their state. They care about our nation. And I find it's mind-boggling that we have so many politicians that make everything black or white, red or blue. What has happened, Governor, to the people who are not far, far left or extreme left? I mean, there are people on the extreme left and there's people on the extreme right. What has happened to those of us moderate people in the middle that says, wait a minute, let's listen, let's communicate, let's compromise. Educate. Compromise in government is not a bad word. And you brought that to the state of Florida when you were the governor before. You do it as a congressman. Talk to us a little bit about your agenda and what is your vision for our state. And I do know that you do believe in compromising and reaching out to each other in government.
Absolutely. I think we need to reach across the aisle as much as we possibly can. We need to work together as Americans first, or as it relates to the state, as Floridians first. Not as a Republican, not as a Democrat, but as Floridians. We're all in this together, particularly when you're talking about a health care crisis that we're suffering right now. It's the worst health care crisis we have had to deal with in over 100 years. And so what you have to do is have people in these positions of authority that understand that respect that, and will lead in that fashion. That's what is necessary now. That's why I'm running for governor. We need to have that kind of leadership back in the governor's mansion, back in the halls of power in Tallahassee, so that we have a House and a Senate and a governor that understand that we all deserve health care, we all deserve good advice, and that we're willing to take good advice from the professionals in any given field. No matter what that issue might be. In this case, obviously, it's health care.
Hold on 1 second, Governor. Ellen O'Neill, our co-host, is going to tell us, listeners, who we're speaking with right now.
We are speaking with Congressman, Florida Congressman Charlie Crist, right here, right on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
That's right, and we are so excited. You have four cheering fans here, Congressman Crist. So let's talk a little bit about why are politicians hedging on President Biden's infrastructure bill, because we live in Florida and there's a lot of people here in Florida that are still complaining that we do need our bridges, our roads, our schools. We need things updated in the state of Florida that will bring jobs to the state of Florida, jobs with benefits for families.
With a livable wage.
But yeah, so talk to us a little bit, what is happening in government that Congressman Charlie Crist, why are people taking such extreme sides and not doing the right thing?
It's beyond my comprehension. I can't explain things that I don't understand, and I don't understand a willingness to listen and learn and do what's best for the people as a whole. As it relates to infrastructure specifically, we're negotiating as we speak, talking about how we can come to a number that people can agree upon. I know that the president wants $3.5 billion allocated to make sure that we have the infrastructure improvements that we all deserve. We all need better roads, better bridges, better rail. And it's such a non-controversial issue from that perspective. This is something that America has needed for a long time. We all recognize it. The last time we had a significant infrastructure overhaul in America was back during the Eisenhower administration. That's been an awfully long time ago. The time is now. We need to move forward on it. I believe, I'm an optimist. I believe that we'll come to a resolution that is reasonable, that is practical, that is common sense, and moves America forward. And as you point out, very appropriately, this plan will provide millions of jobs across the United States, certainly thousands of jobs to the state of Florida. We're in need of it. I mean, if you drive on I-4 between Tampa and Orlando, you understand that we need better transportation. We had an opportunity to get a bullet train at one time from the Obama administration, and former Governor Scott rejected it. Now, that's a shame because we need it now more than ever. But as I said, I am an optimist. I think we'll come to an accord. I think we'll come to a place where enough of us can agree that we'll get a majority in the House and Senate, and we can make America and Florida move forward.
Right. And you're up into polls, Congressman Charlie Crist. You're up into polls, and we're very excited about that. So tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how is the campaign going, and what are you hearing from people as you meet and greet? I know you can't do it a lot in person. I've met you many times on the campaign trail. But what are you hearing from the concerned citizens in the state of Florida?
Well, they're very excited about making a change. They've had it with this governor. They've had it with his lack of leadership. They've had it with the fact that he won't listen to medical experts. In fact, he makes fun of the most respected medical expert on this pandemic, Dr. Fauci, and his campaign is selling merchandise that says, "Don't Fauci my Florida." Well, don't DeSantis our grandparents. I mean, we need to have leadership that understands what's right and understands what's wrong. This is not a right versus left issue. This is a right versus wrong issue. And I think we deserve that new leadership. People are excited about it. They approach me anytime I'm in public and say, you know, keep going, keep working hard. The campaign's going great. You're right. We are ahead in the polls. I thank God for that, but it's one day at a time.
Yeah.
We got to keep working hard. We got about 14 months to go.
Yeah, and I have to say, when I saw that T-shirt, that Governor DeSantis came up with "Don't Fauci my Florida," my husband, who happens to be a retired emergency room physician and a scientist, he said, you know, that is the most disrespectful thing you can do to someone like Dr. Fauci, who has served under so many presidents. And Dr. Fauci himself is a legend in the medical schools. People learn about infectious diseases and their treatments and how, you know, from Dr. Fauci. So the governor, when he speaks, it's almost as though he does not believe in science. He's not using common sense. And he acts like he doesn't have faith, because in order for you to believe in science, you have to have a little bit of faith, too. And that, to me, was disrespectful.
It was very disrespectful. It's unnecessary. That's so sophomoric and childish. Well, you know, not all children do that, so maybe that's not appropriate. But what I do know is that adults should not do that. It is wrong. It is disrespectful. This man has dedicated his life to saving others, and he ought to get the respect that he truly does deserve, not to be, you know, characterized in some comedic way that the governor is doing.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. You know, we all learn from each other, right? We learn from life experience. We learn from speaking. We learn from history. We learn from, we learn to forgive. I mean, we learn as we go along, and that's our role as we get older and bolder and wiser, is to leave a good footprint on the earth for the next generation who is depending on us and the generations to come. And Congressman, I just want to ask you really quick, what happened to all our Democrat friends and people in positions of power in the Democratic Party when Republicans came out and started slamming us for defunding the police and being socialists? I started going on Facebook and social media and saying, wait a minute, there is no socialism. We work hard. We pay taxes. We pay our fair share, and we support social programs like the roads and the schools and healthcare and law enforcement. We pay for the elderly in the nursing homes. We pay for Medicaid. And we don't want to defund any police. We want to allocate funds to neighborhoods, to people, to make their lives better, to look at the social structure of their lives. So I think our party needs to do more to break up those two words and stomp on them. What do you think?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. We in fact, are funding law enforcement. That's exactly what we're doing. We're doing that with our budget this year. We're doing that for our national defense, as a matter of fact, which is vitally important to all of us to maintain our freedom and our independence, and we're going to keep doing it. What they're doing is being untruthful, and that's wrong. And, you know, I'm a capitalist. I'm a proud capitalist. I call myself a compassionate capitalist. I'm the grandson of a Greek immigrant that came to this country with nothing. He came here simply for an opportunity. And he understood that if you got to the United States of America and you lived by the rules, you worked hard, you tried to do what was right, you would have an opportunity and you would have a chance to do better for not only yourself, but your children and your grandchildren. That's what America is about. That's what Democrats are about. And I hope that's what most Republicans are about.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, I'm a proud Democrat. I'm fiscally responsible and socially liberal, because I don't forget where I came from. I do remember not having a pair of shoes back in the Caribbean in Trinidad and Tobago until I was 12 years old. And so if you are blessed to live in this country where we can live and work in the United States, the greatest country on earth, and give back, we all should be giving back. Even if it's 1 hour a month, volunteer, do something, register to vote. Get your family and friends circle registered and have those discussions on a on a weekly basis, how to stay involved in politics and engage, so that people can talk about financial literacy. They can talk about getting their kids into college or trade school or joining the military. And I think, Congressman, I'd like to see on your platform that you talk to more people about the importance of staying involved in politics year-round, because whether they like it or not, life is politics. How do you plan to get people more involved and registered to vote?
Well, I think just what you said, you know, that's the kind of thing I talk about each and every day, that we all need to be involved, that, you know, democracy is not easy. We all have to participate. We all have to register to vote, and we have to exercise that right to vote on Election Day or in early voting leading up to Election Day itself. It's so important, and I always tell people this. You know, it's wonderful to be governor, and I was honored very much to serve as governor before, or attorney general, which I did before that, or commissioner of education, which I served before that, or even if somebody serves as president, as Joe Biden is doing so ably right now. But the highest office in America is the one that we all hold. That office is citizen, and we all have a duty and an obligation, you know, in order for this beautiful democracy to continue to flourish, to participate. Encourage our friends to register to vote if they haven't. Encourage them to vote on Election Day if they hadn't, you know, carved out some time to do so. That's why it breaks my heart so much that this governor signed a bill that's going to make it harder to do mail-in voting in the state of Florida. My 89-year-old father, my 86-year-old mother really enjoy the convenience of mail-in voting. Frankly, so do I, and so do so many other Floridians, especially when we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's a much safer way to do so and not get infected. So these are the kind of things that we need to fight for. We need to participate. We all have a duty. We all have an obligation to do it. And I know that we're going to get there, and we're going to make a change that's coming soon.
Yes, we will. Congressman Chris, I have a question for you. I myself ran for office here in Brevard County in 2020 with my mom, two Latinas on the ballot. We made history in the city of Melbourne. And I want to know, what is your campaign doing to reach out to Hispanics? I felt very under-supported when it came to the DEC, and I'm hoping that you're going to change that tide.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, we just announced a campaign back on May 4th of this year, and already we've done several swings around the state specifically targeting the Hispanic communities. It's so important. You know, this is Hispanic Heritage Month, as a matter of fact.
Yes, it is.
So it's a very appropriate time for that question, and I thank you for it. But, you know, we have a huge Puerto Rican community in the state of Florida, Haitian community, Cuban-American, Nicaraguan-American, the list goes on and on, like myself, Greek-American.
And don't forget the Indian-Americans. They're supporting you a lot, too.
And the census Absolutely. Shows we're the new supermajority.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, and let me tell you this. You bring up India. It's the largest democracy on the face of the planet. So, you know, we have so much to celebrate in the diversity that makes up Florida. That should be a point of pride for all of us. It certainly is for me. And I know it is for you. And so that's what we're going to do, is keep carrying that message around everywhere we go, all over the state, from Pensacola to Key West.
You know, I was walking this morning in the gym before I came to the show, Congressman Chris, and I was speaking to someone who actually voted for President Trump. And he did not vote for Biden, but he said to me, "I'm voting for your man, Charlie Crist." And I said, what made you change your mind? And he said, the pandemic. He said, "I really feel as though Governor DeSantis created too much chaos around this issue, and it never should have been political, and it should have been that if you have to teach the young children how to agree to disagree without bullying."
Exactly. Well, you know, to me, it's like when I was growing up as a young boy here in St. Petersburg, Florida, my parents taught us to practice the golden rule. You know, do unto others as you would have done unto you. And if we simply would all do that and respect one another and have that kind of mutual respect for each other, a lot of these other problems would simply go away. Well, look, we're not going to agree on all the issues. I understand that. And that's okay. You know, to have that kind of, you know, philosophical diversity is all right, too. But it doesn't mean we have to attack each other. It doesn't mean we have to argue with one another. What it means is that we can have our own points of view, but we all come together as Americans, as we saw so many people celebrating, you know, the fact that America came together after 9/11. And I remember that night of 9/11 in 2001, Republicans and Democratic members of Congress stood on the steps of the Capitol, holding hands, singing together, God Bless America, as one.
I know, and you know, it's so sad that it had to take a tragedy for people to come together. We don't need a tragedy. We can come together right now as one. So, Congressman Charlie Crist, we have 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to say, you know, I ran for office in 2018 for state rep against Thad Altman, and I had a lot of support from the Florida Democrats and the Democrats in Brevard, and I learned so much, and I love this country. Thank God I'm here, and I was able to immigrate legally, of course, and live in the United States. So every person who runs for office has a 30-second elevator speech, right? So give us your speech before you go off air. Why are you the best man for the job right now to get your former job back to be the governor for the state of Florida?
Number one, first and foremost, I love Florida. I love Florida with all my heart and all her people. We need to have a governor who has a heart, somebody who has compassion, somebody who has empathy, and somebody who follows science. You know, the bar is not real high as it relates to the opponent, because he's wrong on all of these issues. In fact, I call him Ron DeSantis. If you look at Ron DeSantis, put a W and a G behind it, it's Ron DeSantis. And he's wrong on so many issues. You know, he's wrong on this COVID approach. He's wrong on public education. He's wrong on a woman's right to choose. He's wrong on minority rights, on civil rights. The list goes on, you know, gay rights. It's just awful. And so we need a change, and I know Florida deserves better. I want to fight to keep our environment clean, protect our public schools, pay our teachers what they deserve, makes our environment is protected because that protects our economy. The list goes on and on and on. I just want to do what's right. It's really that simple.
I wish you were here in studio with us, Congressman Charlie Crist, because we are really rooting for you, and I am going to do my darnest best to make sure that I throw all my support behind you. And
same here.
We have four people, and I know my friend Kim Meredith is dying to say hello to you. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Governor. I hope you're optimistic that you can bring both of the extremists on all the sides together.
Well, that's very important. It really is. And I appreciate that, Kim. And I appreciate you, Sita, and Ellen, and Samantha. I can't thank you all enough for your time, the opportunity to share with you a positive, forward-looking message for Florida. You know, we're the best state in the country. We're the Sunshine State. We should be the light of America.
Thank
and
you.
We will.
Thank you, and I think we all need to just tell everybody before you go off air, the only way to make you the governor, the next governor for the state of Florida and give you your old job back is people need to make a plan to vote, period. No excuses.
That's right. Make it today. Make it today.
Thank you so much. And if you want to volunteer in the campaign, go to charliecrist.com. We need all the help we can get. That's
definitely. Right.
Thank you so much for calling in. And Sita, what a fantastic show today.
I love him.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Crist, are you still on the phone?
We are going to... Yeah. While Sita's saying her goodbyes to Congressman Charlie Crist, we are going to sign off here with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Please tune in each and every Monday here on 1510 WWBC and our three FM sister channels while we... Next Monday, 1 o'clock.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.